Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
The book is called Playing Dead, a memoir of terror and survival. And so joining us is Monique Faison Ross. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Al.
Wow, this is quite the book and quite the history. What made you decide to write the book and come out with this?
That's a good question. I never wanted to write the book or to tell the story publicly. Very few people knew up until recently in the last few years, and it was friends, actually, that urged me to consider writing the book and telling the story, that other people needed to know what happened and what, you know, intimate partner violence can look like and what it can escalate to.
Wow. I don't know. Let's begin with your story. Can you maybe let the listeners know where it all started?
Okay. I grew up as an only child in San Diego and, you know, was in high school and was active as a high school student and met someone at a float meeting. I was going to be senior class president for the next year, and he was active, you know, in doing things that high school students like to do. And we were at a meeting, at a float meeting about, you know, homecoming floats. And we met. He pursued me a lot, actually, and he was dating someone. And so I felt like he came on too strong from the very beginning. I told my friends about it, but I really just kind of squelched those feelings and just thought, it's fine. You know, I was 17 at the time. Actually, I was 16, 17. I think I was 16 at the time that we met. And it progressed from there. And little things that happen, you really don't think are a big deal. You believe that you're making it up in your mind. You're kind of dismissing the behavior. Things progressed. I went off to college. He came to visit me a lot. I found myself pregnant, wanted to keep the baby. And I also wanted to have an intact family. I grew up in a single parent household with my mom, and I really wanted my baby to have a family unit. And things just, little things happened. He'd explode. He didn't have control of his temper. nothing distinctly violent until years later, after multiple children, we moved from San Diego, where we had both grown up, to Japan on an assignment with the military, which I initiated. I wanted to move to Japan, and I loved it there. And then we moved back, we moved to Jacksonville, Florida. And I knew ultimately, after so many years of marriage, it was a toxic and hostile marriage. But right before I finally decided to leave him, but was waiting to get the money together to do that, we had an escalated argument that he strangled me briefly and then let go. And that was it for me. And I said, I'm definitely leaving, but not at that moment. I didn't tell him until later. And I just knew that that was the final straw for me. But the unique thing about him and about us is, yes, we were young and married and had three children at the time, but we looked like everyone else. He appeared normal, so to speak. He's well-dressed always, ranked very high in the military. He was moving up the ranks. He was very respectful in public, very well-behaved, always wanted our children to be well-behaved. We appeared to be, you know, your average American family. But underneath, there was always the tendency was there. It was kind of bubbling under the surface.
Were you scared of him? In the early days, were you scared of him, or did it make you nervous around him? Like, how bad was it at the beginning?
I was not afraid of him. And that's the scary part, is I didn't know how much in danger I was and how things escalated over the years. I didn't realize at the time that it was domestic abuse, not necessarily violence, that can escalate and lead to homicide. And I wasn't afraid of him. I thought he just had a lack of control. He was always angry or outbursts or, you know, I wasn't fearful.
Hmm. What was there one particular thing that caused a breaking point or a certain time or pressure that you noticed for when he first assaulted you?
We didn't have any money. We were struggling. So there were always financial arguments, although they're common in marriage, one of the top, you know, divorce reasons. So we struggled like many people struggled, and not having had either of us finishing our educations, we struggled even more. And so there were always arguments surrounding money. We just argued constantly about when we were leaving, if it was about what time we were leaving, about everything. But I desperately and wrongly, in retrospect, wanted to keep an intact family for my kids. And I just believed, you know, with therapy, we tried therapy, things would work for a little while. He made promises he could never keep. He would do better if I didn't leave him. He would stop exploding if I didn't leave him. So the one thing you asked, what was the one thing? There were two incidences that were significant. One was when he said to me, you know, remember in an argument, remember OJ got away with it. And that hit me in the gut like someone had physically punched me in the stomach. And I think that was my internal radar going off. Some kind of alert system saying he really means it. But for those of us who would not kill someone in cold blood, that's just, even though he said it and even though it hit me oddly and strongly, I still did not believe that he was capable of murder. I mean, it's hard to fathom.
Did you have family members or friends who were really didn't like him or felt uncomfortable around him and would tell you so even before you knew something was going on?
No, actually, no one said anything to me about his behavior being odd until I left him, when I separated from him, there was a couple that we had been friendly with, and I was alarmed that my friend, the woman in the couple, said that her husband felt that there was something not right with him, and he didn't want her or her baby to be near us until we were legally divorced and he really had kept his distance. And I was really surprised by that. Later, after things happened, I talked to people who were in high school with us, and they said, we always saw that there was something not quite right. You were the one who didn't see it. And they were right. I didn't know I was truly in lethal danger until it was too late. Up until the last minute, I was trying to help him, you know, turn himself in to the police after I was kidnapped. If I could go back, I would say always be concerned for your own safety and always assume the worst. I don't know if that's because I was married to him for almost 13 years. We had 3 children. I don't know why I didn't realize the danger I was in.
So that whole time, nobody else came to you and said anything then?
No.
Wow.
I think because he appeared, if you were to meet him today and you didn't know the story and you didn't talk to me, you would believe him. He's very believable. He's a sociopath. Most of them are very believable, very charming. He convinced people that he was a great dad, and he was a great dad in many ways. He attempted to be a good husband as I attempted to be a good wife. But we were toxic from the very beginning and should have never been married.
So how was it to leave him then? You said you had had enough and you were going to leave him. How long did you have to prepare for that? And did you have to prepare because you were scared of what he might do?
No, went after the strangulation situation, and the next day or two, I don't remember how long it took me exactly to say, that's it, I'm leaving, the kids and I are moving out. But because I didn't have the money or the savings, I needed to wait for my tax refund that year. And when it came and I was biding my time, just trying to keep the peace in the house, he knew that that's what I was waiting for. And I think it arrived, I don't remember the exact date, but probably towards the end of February, beginning of March timeframe. And he knew. And I think he, at that time, I think I believed that he had accepted that this was going to happen. I was talking to him during those times, that we'll both be better parents, we'll be able to co-parent. And I thought, wrongly, that he had accepted that this was imminent. And he helped, I rented a U-Haul truck, and then he helped me load it. We decided what I was taking, what he was taking, and he asked that he keep some stuff for the kids because he, too, would be sharing custody. And so I thought, maybe this is really going to work. He's come to the realization that we are, in fact, have a hostile marriage. So when I moved out, everything seemed fine. He helped me load the U-Haul truck and helped me unload it and asked me if I needed him to help me unpack, and I said no. And things seemed to be semi-okay. He made promises to help financially, which he never came through with, which caused me more problems down the road. But he even talked to me. He started dating someone, and I thought, oh, this is great. He was talking to me about it. We could talk. I thought, we're going to have a good divorce. The kids are going to be healthier in 2 separate households, and he's going to be fine. He's going to move on. And all along, we were talking about, people he was dating. But as I think about it and I go back, that was all a ploy. The promises of money, the promise to help me, the promises the talking to me about people he was dating, it was all to try and get me to be jealous or to want him back or to be desperate to go back by him not helping me, not coming through with any of the promises he made. And so ultimately, as time went on, there were several things that happened in between. Eventually, I met someone at work. This was 6 months later. and a lot happened in between that time, but I met someone who asked me out on a date. He happened to have the three kids. This was the first time he kept all three kids at the same time for one night. He usually didn't do that. And I wasn't suspicious of it at the time because I wasn't seeing anybody. I didn't need my time. I just needed to be away from him and at peace in my own apartment. And I was. So I didn't mind that he didn't take all three kids. But that, too, was also to ensure that I didn't have any non-child time available to me. And so I went out on a date and told him about it the next day because why wouldn't I? You know, we had been discussing people he was dating. And from that moment on, things never, never went back or regained what normalcy I thought we had. He completely went off the rails.
Because he felt like you were moving on without him.
I guess so. I think he saw me as property.
Mm-hmm.
That was never the type of marriage we had, so I'm not sure where that disconnect was. But, you know, someone in mental health explained to me once that me and his children were all, his entire identity. And so by me leaving him and dating someone else threw him into a reality that he couldn't handle. So, you know, I never cared what he could handle or couldn't handle. He had been given years in the marriage, and I gave it years in the marriage, and his lack of ability to cope was not my problem, but he destroyed people's lives in the, you know, when he went off the rails, so many lives were destroyed. His parents lost every dime they had in savings. They lost their house. It was terrible.
So when you say he went off the rails, was that instantly when you told him about the date you had?
It was instant.
Mm.
He confronted the guy I was seeing. We worked at the same hospital. He confronted him that day. He stalked us full time for almost 3 months, full time. And it never slowed down. Like, I felt like I couldn't catch my breath. But did I believe I was in danger of being murdered by him? No. I just believed he was harassing me, harassing him. I averaged 10 911 phone calls a week. Even the police didn't believe that he was seriously dangerous, that he was going to do anything dangerous to me or try and take my life.
Was he still seeing the kids and having his turn with them, and everything was going fine with them?
Well, during those 3 months of stalking, he was fighting me for full custody. So he really followed the blueprint of full domestic violence, which I didn't know at the time. He made sure that I could not support myself and the kids by never providing child support. Forget alimony. That wasn't even up for discussion. But any sort of child support, he was trying to turn the kids against me. He hired a high-powered attorney that his parents paid for to fight me for full custody, saying that I was unfit, that I needed supervised visitation, that he lied and said he had been the full-time caretaker of them, which was not the case. So during all of that, he, on top of that, was stalking me and the guy that I was seeing at the time full-time. So he was fighting me for full custody. He was not providing any support. Then he started to do bizarre things like keeping pieces of the kids' belongings. So, for example, our son's backpack, or no, it was my oldest daughter's backpack, or my son's T-ball mitt and bat, like little things to, I don't know what the point of that was. I never understood it. I don't know if it was to force me to go out and buy other things. It was some attempt at desperation of control. And the less control he could get, the more outrageous he was. And so 2 weeks into the stalking, so 2 weeks, just 2 weeks after I went on that date, I had to file a temporary injunction for protection. And so did the guy I was seeing. And then it became final later that month, because the day he was served with that, he violated it. It was in his car. The police arrested him. He was arrested a couple of times. Each time the bond was raised with from wherever it was, and his parents continued to funnel money into the private attorney. And each time we appeared in court, he was very respectful to the judge, very well-dressed, very well-spoken. He always said, "Yes, Your Honor," "No, Your Honor," "I won't do it anymore, Your Honor." And he would leave court and pick up right back where he left off. And it just continued that way till eventually he caused me to lose my job. There were no, to my knowledge, workplace violence, guidelines at that time. I don't know what he said to my supervisor, but I was in a probationary period. And off the record, she said to me, "When all of this gets straightened out, we'd love to have you back. But in the meantime, we have to protect people here. We worry about you, but we have to protect people," which I understood. What could I say?
Right.
I don't know what he said to her. She never divulged that. But so he caused me to lose my job. So he just ticked each box to ensure that I could not take care of my children during that time.
So when did it hit come to a point where he actually decided to kidnap? Cap you. How long was that into the separation?
Into the separation, it was 9 months. It was 3 months into the stalking. So I think he was waiting for the opportunity, the right opportunity. I think that was his plan all along. There were several different things he did throughout to torment me. He followed me constantly. But that particular day that I was kidnapped, the night before, I hadn't called the police, but the police caught him stalking and had led him, he had led them in a high-speed chase, and it was raining, as it often does in Florida, off and on. And they called off the high-speed chase, came back to me out of breath after running after him on foot. So at some point, he had jumped out of his vehicle that he had taken from me early in the stalking. He also took my mode of transportation. But so he had two vehicles. One he had reported was stolen.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
The police knew that that wasn't true. He had hidden it, actually. And so the other car that he had taken from me 3 months earlier, he jumped out and ran from them on foot. So they impounded that car. So I don't know if that caused him to have no other options. He had no other way, mode of transportation. He had no other money with him, whatever he had in the car at the time. He wasn't planning to be picked up at that time. He wasn't planning to be, you know, running on foot. So what happened when they ran to me and ran to my apartment and asked me where might he be, they told me they had chased him in a car chase and then chased him on foot. And did I have any idea where he might be? Of course, I didn't. And I gave them his girlfriend's address at the time. She knew none of this was going on. I spoke to her after everything had happened, and she said she thought he was a little obsessed with the kids, but she had no idea that he was stalking me full time, that he was pursuing custody with only supervised visitation. She had no idea any of that was going on. So they went to her. He was not there. The only thing that happened that I would have loved to have known is for the police to come back and tell me we didn't find him. That was the part that was missing, because when they left me, I had no idea what was happening. I went back to bed, got the kids up the next Monday morning, ready for school. My two youngest kids were with me at the time, because my oldest, he had manipulated against me and she was staying with him for the last couple of weeks. So my two youngest and I woke up like normal. I fixed their lunches, got dressed. I did grab pepper spray walking out the door because it had become a routine. And that morning, walking my kids to the car to drive them to school, he ran at me and kidnapped me. So, you know, I don't know that I would have done something different that morning if I had known they hadn't found him, but I, you know, it's hard to say. We can always second guess, you know, what would have happened. But so that's what precipitated the kidnapping, was him having no vehicles, the police looking for him in a manhunt, and him having little to no money, I presume.
Wow. But when he kidnapped you, it wasn't just to have you drive him somewhere or to give you money.
Oh, no. Nope. He kidnapped me. My neighbor, thankfully, yelled to my children and said, don't listen to him, because he was screaming at them to get in the car. And they ran back upstairs to her. Thankfully, they didn't listen to him. But he didn't have me drive him. He brought two different weapons, a gun and a butcher knife, which I didn't know he had a butcher knife at the time. The gun he ended up dropping. And later I found out it was not a real gun, but it looked like a real gun to me, someone not familiar and seeing someone run at me. So in my effort to stay out of the car, I fought with him to try and stay out of the car. He eventually picked me up on the passenger side where I was, put himself in next to me, turned on the car, threw it into reverse. It was an automatic, not a stick. He would have had to be over there. and over in the driver's side, and took off immediately because he knew, with the neighbors seeing it was a Monday morning, 8 o'clock, the police were going to be there in moments. So he took off, and we went down into a, you know, a couple of different, like a grocery store parking lot. We went through, flew through a bunch of areas and then onto the main road, and he blew out a tire because he took off so fast and so hard with the car. And he moved over to the driver's side, and he kept saying, I just want to talk to you. I just want to talk to you. And so eventually I'm thinking, okay, this, you know, he must mean he really wants to talk to me, because again, murder is not in my frame of reference. And so he spent about 6 hours with me trying to convince him to turn himself in, me convincing him to let me call a friend to get the kids, because I was worried that Child Protective Services would take them without either of us, you know, anywhere to be seen. And so I did get a friend to get my children, and I just was convinced that he would stop this madness if he just talked to me. There were a couple other things that happened while I was kidnapped, and they didn't make sense to me. I just needed to get home to my children. I just kept saying, I just need to get home to the kids. He kept asking me questions about my relationship with the other guy, about our marriage. You know, murder still was not on my mind. It wasn't until the last second that I realized it was too late.
So he actually left you for dead. He actually beat you where he thought you were dead and left you in the woods.
Yeah. And he checked my pulse, and he said out loud, you're not dead yet. And so I knew that he wanted me dead. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So now, after this is all said and done,
yeah,
you're still in fear and still living, looking over your back.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'll never, until he dies, I'll never have peace. Well, I mean, he cannot contact me. Right. I have a lifetime injunction for protection, forever, for as long as I live. But I had an injunction for protection at the time, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what happened with him legally? Was he sent to prison?
He was. He was shot by the police and survived. How many people survived being shot by the police? Very few. If any. I can't even think of any. He was in the hospital a long time. And then he went to prison. He plea bargained when I was able to repeat. You know, I had the mind enough to be able to repeat what had happened, and his attorney, even though he had bled his parents dry of any money that they had, all of it, he convinced him to plea bargain, which he did. He initially plea bargained for 26 years, meeting in Florida at that time. I don't know if it's still the same. I think that it is. 26 years he needed to serve 80% of that, which I think would have been about 20, 21 years. But then a few years into his sentence, he convinced a judge through a public defender at that time that he needed to be heard again, that he misunderstood his plea bargain, that he was misled or something, he convinced the judge of. And in lieu of that, I agreed to reduce it to 20 years. He'd have to serve 80%, which put him out. He got out of prison after 16 years. But I, you know, at the time he was pleading to have a new trial or whatever he was trying to get, I didn't want to take one child out of college and another out of high school at that time and upset my children's lives to go and see him in a courtroom and try and find witnesses. And many times I understand in plea bargains, they don't keep evidence. So I felt I had no choice to keep our lives as peaceful as possible is to agree to 20 years and he would get out in 16, and he did. So I have not heard from him, but if I do, directly or through a third party, he will go immediately back to prison.
Yeah. Has he attempted anything, or has he been around, or have you heard anything?
I have not. No, not to my knowledge he's attempted anything. And he would be, that would be really unwise for him because, I do monitor him because while I was kidnapped, he raped me a couple of times. And so he's a registered sex offender, which in a way is a gift to me because I can monitor his whereabouts. So I know where he is and can see online that he's registered and doing what he's supposed to do, but they would snatch him up and send him back to prison in a minute if he contacts me or anyone. I still am in contact with my former attorney, who's now a judge. I'm in contact with the state district attorney, who was the former, at the time he was the assistant state attorney, who prosecuted him for the state of Florida. So I still am in contact with all of those people, even the police that were involved. So
It
would be very unwise for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has he been able to see the kids, or do the kids still want to see him? Or
they do not. They want nothing to do with him.
Hmm.
And he has not reached out, to my knowledge. That's their choice. They're all adults, well into adulthood. And he's never admitted what he did, never said, I'm sorry. So we don't discuss it, the kids and I. I've never asked them not to see him, or they made their own choices.
Right, right.
The loss, the real loss is his family. His family are wonderful people, and I wish all these years they could have been involved in the kids' lives. But he's such a master manipulator. The kids never felt comfortable being in contact with his family because he would, drill his family members for where they are, what they're doing.
Hmm.
So.
Wow. That way. So what do you hope people get out of your book? What is it that you want them to walk away with?
That's such an important question, because my hope is that people will learn to follow their gut. Men and women, there are dangerous situations everywhere, from getting into an elevator, being in a parking garage, someone that shows up at the door. Follow your gut. If I had followed my gut when I was 16, 17, none of this would have happened. And if I had listened to my gut, I truly was in danger in the very beginning of that kidnapping and put my own feelings aside, and I should have never done that. I also hope that people will see and read, what does sociopathic behavior look like? What are the danger signs? Because from the outside, all things seemed normal. But there were so many red flags that I should have picked up on. His behavior was just bubbling under the surface all those years, and I didn't recognize it. That's what I hope that they get from it.
Mm. Now, do you have a website, or do you have a site where people can go and find out more information about your books and anything else?
Yeah. I do. It's a very long website name because it's my full name, MoniqueFaisonRoth.com. And there's information on there. There's interesting things about what I'm doing. I was asked to be on the Fatality Review Task Force as a volunteer, which is not an easy job for the state of Connecticut. And I do that as the only survivor on the task force. It's a hard job, but I try and help provide all the professionals that I sit around the table with the insight of what it means to be the non-professional in day-to-day life, dealing with an intimate partner who's violent, but you don't recognize it. What caused me not to realize the danger that I was in? So there's a little bit about that. There's some blogs that I've written over the years, and books that I'm reading. And I appreciate anyone willing to read the story. It's not an easy one. The second half of the book really has your heart racing from what I'm told by people, but there's a lot to be learned, I think.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a great book. We totally recommend it. I also forgot to mention you are the daughter of San Diego Charger football great Earl Faison, I guess, right?
Yeah, I am.
How did your family deal with all of this?
Well, my parents were divorced when I was young, and my dad and I were not as close as I would have liked. He's passed away now. I miss him terribly. He was such a gentle giant, you know, just a sweetheart of a person. And I wish, you know, we had grown closer over the years, but we certainly stayed in contact and spoke. He was devastated when he heard what had happened, and he didn't come out right away. We didn't visit for some time, but we spoke a lot on the phone. He also spoke to the man that helped me the day that I was rescued, because if it wasn't for him, I would not be here. I could have never gotten help on my own. And so my dad was devastated, and my mom flew out immediately, and other family members flew to me immediately. But there was chaos at the hospital because, you know, he was shot and I was the trauma patient before him, and we ended up at the same hospital, and both sets of family members come flying in from California. It was kind of chaotic for the hospital staff, but my dad, always the rational mind, trying to, you know, in the beginning when he found out I was pregnant, he was the one who called the family meeting. He always tried to be rational and cool and calm, and he was a calm man, nothing like my husband at the time.
How is everyone doing now? How are the kids? How are you? How did life go for you guys now after all this is behind you?
Well, it's like it was yesterday. I have four kids now, all adults, from young adults to, you know, well into adulthood. My oldest daughter is married and has one child. But she was cautious in picking a mate. She was very careful, and all of my children are. Their heightened sense of, you know, watching people and watching for signs. But other than that, everyone's well-educated and happy and living their lives and doing well. But we do look over our shoulder. We don't pick up the phone for calls we don't recognize. We don't go to the door and answer the door of people we don't expect to be coming. We all live a little more, a lot more cautiously. And my PTSD is not about him. It's about dangers everywhere. It's about someone getting me. So I won't go into that. That's really a rabbit hole in and of itself. But I can tell you that trauma never leaves us. So it hasn't left my children, and it hasn't left me.
Well, we wish you all the best, and hope the future continues and gets nothing but better. Our guest today has been Monique Faison Ross, and the book is Playing Dead. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much, Monique.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Has been completed.
The end! By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Planning
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.